Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Practice Space, where we'll explore ideas and skills to support us in our professional practice. I'm Stacey Remke, a clinical social worker and currently a professor at the University of Minnesota's Graduate School of Social Work. Before coming to the university, my practice experience was in the field of pediatric palliative care, where I dealt with complex themes like grief, loss, child welfare, and sustainability within the field. I have a great interest in exploring how social workers can find support and develop skills to sustain their important practice.
And I'm Sarah Remke. I'm a practicing end-of-life doula and a meditation teacher. I have a particular interest in energy and boundaries. I also have a private practice where I work with individuals and professionals, often therapists and caregivers, where we explore these various concepts and how they intertwine with our work. How and what does our energy communicate? How do we discern our own energy versus someone else's energy? And how do we create and maintain these boundaries? I find these subjects absolutely fascinating. And I am the sister of Stacey Remke.
Thanks for joining us in this space, the practice space. We would like to talk about the intersections between our meditation practice and our various clinical practices and how we've found these skills to be really helpful with promoting our well-being and also our engagement with our clients. So today we thought we'd talk a little bit about some of the challenges in practice that involve interacting with very intense energies in the work that we do. And specifically, I think it's helpful to think about concepts of secondary trauma or vicarious trauma. And what that means is actually absorbing or being impacted by the suffering of other people. And sometimes that suffering is overt and obvious. You know, people are crying, they're angry, some injury has just occurred, some harm is obvious. Other times it's more subtle, and it's something more, I think of in the context of, say, historical trauma. It's sort of an awareness or a suffering that people carry with them, and it might actually stem from generations of exposure to suffering or experiences of suffering. And so I think we want to have kind of a wide view of what vicarious trauma could look like in our practices.
Yes. And there's also, what about the vicarious trauma of, for instance, the George Floyd murder, or the vicarious trauma of the war in Gaza? No matter what side you may fall on in your belief system, we all experience that to some degree.
Our imaginations take us into those spaces very quickly. We start to wonder, what if that was me? What if it was my loved ones there? Maybe people actually know people that are directly impacted by those things.
Just seeing people suffering and seeing people's rage, and they're, you know, on some level, we do absorb that, I think.
You know, immigration situation right now, we hear about migrants fleeing from untenable situations, whether that be war, climate change, violence in their communities, just searching for a better life. All of those things do impact us. And lots of times people say, well, what can I do about those large scale things out there? Mm-hmm. And especially I think about, like, when we're dealing with vicarious trauma very directly in their clients, for example. And then there's also these big background situations unfolding. So there's kind of like a double whammy or multiple layer impact.
Yes, yes.
So one of the things we can do about it is work to clear our own space.
Correct.
You want to say a little bit more about what that involves?
Well, you know, from where I come from in this work, as my teachers always say, there's never nothing you can do. And clearing your own space actually helps to create a spaciousness for whoever it is that you're working with. And as we touched on last time, that idea of neutrality doesn't mean that you don't have an opinion. Neutrality means you're not trying to force or push your beliefs, your agenda on anyone else. You're saying hello to them. You're saying hello to the situation. exactly as the way it is. And that could mean a situation with a lot of pain, with a lot of complexity, with a lot of you don't know what to do. But as you begin to clear your own space, it makes a spaciousness for the other person or people for you to be able to relate in a different way.
And I also think of like that distinction that's important to make, I think, between clearing our space, differentiating our energies from others. It's not the same as not remembering, not caring. Those human reactions are still very much present. They're still very available to us.
Exactly. I think of it as a lot of times, let's just say we're talking about a big global situation, you know, when everyone just sort of piles on the fray, it can actually become more confusing. And so the more that we can clear our own space, the more we can clear how is that in my own personal life, injustice or police brutality or murder, or how do I experience those things in my own life? As we clear those, we actually move out of that fray and make more room for the nuances of what's actually happening.
Yeah, and I think of like in situations, like practice situations where, you know, maybe, or and I think of this one in my practice when I was involved in like a child protection situation.
Yes.
And, you know, recognizing that we needed to change the parenting situation, at least for the time being. And there was tremendous suffering on the part of the child, the family. You know, sometimes there would be children who'd suffered quite a bit of abuse. We'd come into the hospital, for example, in the aftermath of that. And, you know, I think about those kind of situations too, where it's, you know, impossible not to be impacted by that. And what do we do with that experience after the fact?
That's a really great example and a really hard example, because so a child comes into you, they've been in a very harmful situation, and we maybe, our temptation is to jump in and rescue them. That's not always the most helpful thing to that child. You know, the more spaciousness that we can create in ourselves, it allows that child to find their own resilience and spaciousness within themselves. It may take a while. It may not come out in words, but, right, you know, if we can help them, it's like by us doing that for ourselves, it's sort of a modeling for how that child can do that for themselves, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think with parents too, where sometimes, you know, we were concerned or suspicious that they'd, you know, committed some maltreatment, and to be able to see them as whole people.
Yes.
You know, and that spaciousness also allows us to recognize that people are impacted by energies and influences and experiences of their own. You know, they're not just a terrible parent. You know, there's a whole lot of things that go into that, and that allows us to be more compassionate, I think, in a holistic way.
I mean, if you just keep in mind that there's always, always much more than you know going on. It's interesting. Right. One of my students brought up, and she came through a very difficult abusive situation. And then one day she said, but my mother was also, when she shined her light on you, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And so touched by that, and the tension of that, that she, mm-hmm. So it wasn't easy to just hate her mother, because her mother also in some way loved her.
And we're talking about extreme situations here, but isn't that a common human experience actually? That
probably
things are a mixed bag, right? Things we love about people, things we don't like so much.
Yes,
you know,
that's
all
right.
All the time, all the time. So, you know, it allows us to see people more as who they really are. And then people feel really seen and heard when we operate out of that more spacious place.
I absolutely. And I think you just hit a real key there. It's that when we are able to hold that tension, knowing that there's more going on than what we know, it gives more depth to the other person, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they're not just put into a little box.
Right. They don't need to defend themselves or resist in quite the same way, because they feel more understood, perhaps.
Or seen, just right. Seen. Yeah.
And even if you need to do hard things, and I know we're going to talk about boundaries in subsequent podcasts, but, you know, think about the spaciousness creates a boundary that allows people to be who they really are, including ourselves. And sometimes we, in our professional roles, might need to say hard things, institute hard changes, but that doesn't mean we can't also see the whole people that we're dealing with.
Right.
And kind of recognize our own wholeness.
That's really interesting that you brought that up, because do you think that what happens when we have to say something, not have to, but when we are going to say something that's very difficult, and it's really hard for us to do that, that we close a part of ourselves down, and in fact, that doesn't help us ultimately or the other person ultimately.
Yeah, I think of it like sort of bracing myself when I've been in that situation, or
yeah.
Breath holding is, you know, often a kind of a signal I see that that's happening.
Yeah. I think when you can hold those tensions, you're able to feel more compassionate. And yeah. Even have to say that hard thing, you can really understand where it's coming from, and that can help you.
Well, and I think, you know, compassionate toward the other is important, but also compassion toward ourselves, right? Like,
yes.
I think about, you know, I'm not enjoying this role I'm in, or, you know, I appreciate what this person's dealing with, and at the same time, I can't support their behavior. So, you know, it allows us to simultaneously be compassionate to the other, our client, but also to ourselves.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So we talked a little bit about a very simple exercise that could help us create space in the moment for the other person and for ourselves. I wonder if you want to walk us through that.
Yeah. So last time we talked a little bit about this egg shape of energy that surrounds our body. And what happens is, you know, energies come into our space and they can create discomfort for us, especially if we're talking about different trauma situations. We pick up energy and it comes into our space. So how do we clear that out of our space? And one really simple way that I like is, if everyone wants to just get comfortable and breathe deeply into your belly and just say hello to the edges of your aura or your space, that egg shape that surrounds you, just say hello to those edges. And, you know, for women, that's going to be 3 to 5 feet out from your body. And for men, that's going to be 2 to 3 feet out from your body in all directions, above you, below you, in front of you, behind you, your left side and your right side. Just take a minute and really just breathe into that space. And then what we want to do is we want to find what we're calling the center of our head. And if you were to go, you know, say you're at the bridge of your nose and go back 2 inches towards the back of your head and imagine a line from the top of one ear across to the other. And where those two lines intersect in the center of your head, that's a very nice, spacious place to find. Even if you're having trouble finding it, just imagine that you're going there. You're not trying to see, you're just relaxing into that open, open space. Breathe deeply into your belly. And now let's start with somebody easy, right? Because this is a practice meditation. Take somebody easy that you've had a conflict with. That could be a sibling, that could be a child, that could be your boss. And imagine that person out on a chair, outside of your aura, outside of that 3 to 5 feet from your body. Let them sit on a chair. And you're going to breathe your energy back in from them and let that come into the top of your head. And as you breathe out, you're going to send their energy back to them. You're going to do that very gently. And just imagine that going just over their right shoulder. You're not forcing that energy back at them. You're just giving it back to them for them to pick up if they want or not. So let's just take a couple of minutes and do that. Just breathe your energy in from wherever time and place it may have exchanged with them. Breathe it back into you, into the top of your head. And as you breathe out, just imagine their energy going back to them. Breathe deeply into your belly, calling your energy back in through the top of your head and sending their energy back to them. It's really important when you send their energy back to them that you're not, you know, bombarding them. You're just offering that just above their shoulder. They can take it back if they want. But regardless what happens, you have moved it out of your system. And then you can thank that person for being willing to work with you. You can thank your body for being willing to change. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. How did that feel? Did you do it?
I did. Like, yeah. I think of, like, sometimes I visualize like a offering, like my hands offering the energy back to that person. You know, it still flows toward them. And I like that idea of sending it to their shoulder. But that kind of helps me maintain the attitude of offering instead of forcing, just a little thing I do.
Right.
It's so
I worked with this woman and we did that exercise and she was doing it with her husband. And she said, he was like jumping around and I said, oh, you know, she was just like bombarding him with it. And he was dodging it, like dodging bullets.
Like dodgeball, playing dodgeball. Well, I think of, like, you know, the reality that we do gather people's energy all day and we leave ours around everywhere. And it's almost like a nice, especially at the end of the day kind of thing to do. And you, again, as a practitioner, maybe you've seen a number of clients during the day and encountered a number of people in your personal life. You can have a row of chairs in front of you.
That's
and
right.
you can send energy to all of those people.
That's right.
And reclaim yours. And, you know, part of the goal here is that we're just running our own energy as uncluttered as possible by other people's, because we're not wired to run their energy and they're not wired to run ours. And so to think about, like, okay, just at the end of the day, that could be a nice little cleansing ritual. Probably helps sleep. It probably helps relaxation.
Oh yeah.
Like that, for sure.
When you find yourself just like cycling around some person who's driving you crazy, I guarantee you that exercise for 3 minutes and it's going to relieve something. It's going to alleviate something. And it's all, I always remind people that, you know, we exchange energies. This isn't a conscious thing, right? People aren't trying to put their energy into you to bother you. It's just a natural thing that happens when we're interacting with people. As we learn these tools, we can go, oh, I'm carrying around that person's sadness. I'm carrying around that person's anger. I'm carrying around that person's cry for help. You know, whatever it is that you may be carrying around, you have the tools to clear that out of your space. And that becomes your responsibility. It's not that the person did a bad thing to you. They did that unconsciously. You picked it up unconsciously.
It's kind of a side effect of empathy in a way.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I think of, like, you know, even the language that is used a lot, like, I'm going to sit with them and their feelings. I'm going to take on their feelings with them. You know, that kind of language happens all the time. And I found myself since learning these skills to think of, like, oh, I want to reframe that. I want to think more in terms of, like, I want to recognize, I can sit with them in my own space companionably.
Yes.
Or therapeutically. And that's different than needing to take on their feelings, which is, I think, code for running it through our own energy fields. And I think, you know, again, people aren't thinking about it quite like that, but I think it's really getting at that problematic view that empathy requires that we take on their feelings somehow. And it does not.
And it also, I would argue, it does not really serve that person.
Right.
Because, you know, their feelings are actually there to help them.
Right.
And if their energy is left in all these workers all over, it just makes them more and more dependent and they have less of their own resources.
Right. Agreed.
So the more that you can give someone back their energy and take back your own energy, it allows you to find more resources, but it also allows them to find their own resources, which may be very different from what you think they would be.
Right. And I think even that sort of empowerment that comes from them experiencing themselves more directly.
Yes.
That's having clarity about their own situation or their own feelings.
Right.
And if we can stay out of the way,
right.
We're likely to find those things. And I think, you know, again, that's sort of circling back to what we talked about in the beginning about our exposure to the suffering of other people, mm-hmm. which takes a toll on us as practitioners if we don't figure out some strategies to kind of clear after. Or, you know, and sort of, and again, it's recognizing what we just went through with that person, perhaps, or what they're going through, or what we just recognized in them. We don't forget about it. We don't stop caring. But on a very sort of essential level, we're clearing, separating, disengaging the energies in a way that frees us up as well.
Yes.
And, you know, just it's a meditation strategy. And so it does help settle down, fight, flight, fright kind of reactions, kind of polyvagal hypersensitivity as well. So to kind of think about that.
I think it's interesting. Will you let me know how you think of this? But, you know, we sort of rush in to rescue someone.
Right.
Of course, there's very difficult things happening. I'm not denying that. But when we rush in with the energy of rescuing, first of all, we can be sort of avoiding whatever's happening within us, which I think is really important to attend to whatever's happening in you. But it's also you take away kind of the agency of that other person to find their own tools wherever they may find them.
Right.
And I think that's something that isn't, that a lot of people don't really think about. It's, you know, they've already lived through something terrible, right? You're trying to help them in the aftermath of that terrible thing that's happened.
Right.
So how can we help people to find, to have all their own energy, to find their own creativity on how to make their way through something?
Yeah. And it's important to believe people are capable of that.
Yes.
You know, that we don't rush in and rescue them. And undermine their own capabilities, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, people are deeply, deeply creative when they're encouraged or, you know, supported in finding their own way through that.
Yeah.
Whether that's through becoming an artist or a spoken word poet or a therapist or however it is that they make their way through that.
Or even just being invited to sit in their own situation in such a way that resistance is minimized, defensiveness is minimized, and they can perhaps see their own situation more clearly.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a big topic.
It is. I'm sure we could go on, but maybe that's a good resting place for today.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, the key thing is to just remember that we are exchanging energies all day. And so to bring your own back to you.
Yes.
It helps you, you know, you're calmer because your energy is not out there. Like, you know, the other day you talked about when you find the center of the head, you're no longer kind of chasing.
Right.
I think that's something similar. When you bring all your energy back to you, you're not going to be at your work 24/7 because you're okay. My work is over. I bring my energy back to myself. I let it calm me down.
Yeah. And that could be a great little ritual. Doesn't have to be fancy or take much time at the end of the work day to just kind of differentiate between the work life and personal life.
It could be 5 minutes, 3 minutes, as much minutes as you have. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, even just, I love how our teachers talk about, you know, you can allow the process to continue in the background. Mm-hmm. So you can, you know, do that very intentionally for a couple minutes. And then kind of invite that process of reclaiming your own energy and sending others back to them with kindness, you know, you can have that move to the background and continue on with your own day.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I love that.
Well, that does it for our practice session today. We hope you will practice these skills on your own. Let us know how it's going, and we'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining us today. Bye.
This podcast was supported in part by a grant from the Minnesota Department of Human Services, Children and Family Services Division.